This is episode one of the Rhode Island Liberty Report. In this episode, Eric and I will do a roundup of the midterm elections. We'll take a look at how those numbers played out across the state. We'll take a look at the ballot referendums and what that means as far as debt goes to the average Rhode Islander. We'll also talk about the Democratic domination of the election and the rise of the progressive movement in the Democratic Party. And we'll also take a look at the death of the GOP or the potential death of the GOP. We do a little bit of reminiscing about the Bob Healey campaign and how those numbers compared to this election and the fun we had on that. And we hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report, your source for libertarian commentary on current events in the Ocean State and Southern New England. Coming to you from Rothbard Studios, here are your hosts, Mike and Eric.
Hey, welcome to the first episode of the Rhode Island Liberty Report from libertyri.com. This is our first episode. We're super excited to finally be getting this off the ground. We've been planning this for, a couple of years now, probably.
At least a couple of years, Mike.
Exactly.
But we're going for it, and I'm super excited that we're finally getting it off the ground. I'm excited for Rhode Island to have a source for libertarian commentary and some alternative media that people are really thirsting for.
For sure. And there's really nothing out there, and I haven't heard anything within Rhode Island or even Southern New England like this. So hopefully it'll be well received and we can keep moving forward and advancing the cause of liberty here in Rhode Island.
You got it, brother.
Which brings us to how about that election?
I mean, it's beyond words. I mean, I really, you know, it's not even the victories to me, Mike. It's like, you know, you almost expect the Democrats to take all these races. To me, it was more the breadth of the victory. I mean, it was just a dominating, heartbreaking, just soul destroying defeat on so many levels for people who are liberty lovers, like myself and like you and like so many others. I think just across the board. I mean, there were a couple of closer races, you know, in spots like in the General Assembly. But I mean, if you look at the statewide races, I mean, it was just a complete blowout. There's really no getting around that. One of the biggest blowouts I've seen. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, I don't know. I think the candidates were not super strong. I mean, they just weren't really super strong candidates. I think that's part of it. I think the anti-Trump sentiment is part of it. I think the growth of the social state and more and more people being dependent on government to help them in their lives, you know, it sustains the status quo. You know, you're not going to buck the trend.
Yeah. Also the amount of people exiting the state too, you know, you're
that's a good point.
You're just leaving the pool of people left or all the people that are, you know, either stuck here, can't move or, you know, dependent on the system.
That's a really good point. I'd love to look at some numbers on that.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, you look at the congressional districts, right, and how they're so polarized at this point, and you know, so many of them are safe red seats or safe blue seats because, you know, people are just sort of naturally kind of moving into areas that, you know, where people are more like them. But I feel like it's even happening with the states now. I mean, the states themselves are becoming, you know, there's so few purple states out there now, and you know, Rhode Island and Connecticut and New Jersey. I mean, these states are getting bluer and bluer, and you know, states like, you know, Alabama or not Texas so much, but Utah or, you know,
the Dakotas, Montana.
I mean, these states are getting redder and redder. Right. I mean, they're not getting, you know, they're not really moving much in the other direction. So, you know, it's people are sort of self-segregating, you know, and I think there's a certain aspect to the idea that, you know, people want to live the way they want to live and they're going to move someplace where they can live that way. And, you know, maybe that's the answer. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe at the end of the day, the answer is, you know, Rhode Island's going in a certain direction. And, you know, look, we're here fighting the good fight. We're trying to change it because we love our state and we don't want to see it go down the toilet bowl, you know. But at a certain point, I mean, I think there is a legitimate thought process that you have this thought. Maybe, you know, maybe things would be better if I moved to Maine or New Hampshire or Montana or, yeah, I don't know. The thought crosses your mind. I mean, it does. I mean, it definitely goes through there.
No, for sure. And you know, it's funny. We even we saw that in our comments section on the Facebook page, you know, well, why don't you move then? And it's like, well, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the answer. I mean, I still have some fight in me, so I'm not going to leave. And not everybody wants to leave too, right? You've settled down here. You've got a good job. Maybe you've started a business. Luckily, you know, somehow started a business in Rhode Island, or you've got family roots here, you know, things like that. You know, you're not going to be able to move your grandparents, or your parents or your grandparents, right? So, you know, you want to keep the kids and the grandkids next to the family and all that type of stuff. So,
right.
You know, that's something that anchors people here. But
yeah, it's a real simple thing to be able to say to someone, oh, you know, just you don't like it, then get out. Or to even say, oh, if things don't go my way, I'm going to move. Well, it's easy to say that. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, to uproot your entire life and your business and your family, it's, you know, it's not totally realistic to do that. I mean, people do it, I guess, but it's not realistic, and we shouldn't have to.
No. I tell you something that was interesting looking at the numbers of the election, right? So we just started doing a little bit of number crunching on a spreadsheet, and it was just quite amazing when you start, you know, mapping it out what actually happened there. And you know, you're looking at, like, you know, the amount of incumbents that retained their seats, or the amount of unopposed elections, which was quite insane. There was, you know, 39 people in the House and 17 total in the Senate were just unopposed.
Totally unopposed.
Yeah, that's insane.
And obviously, right? Most of those are Democrats, obviously.
The right? Vast majority, right, exactly. So, yeah, there was only two Republicans and one in the Assembly and one senator that was unopposed, which is, well, not that there are many of them anyway, well, but...
So, I mean, right, exactly. But, I mean, why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think, you know, so many races go unopposed in this state? Like, what would you say is the reason for that?
I think a lot of it is apathy. Like, people just don't feel like running because they know what they're going to go up against. I mean, you look at some of these races got pretty dirty, you know,
right?
And it, you know, people don't want to expose themselves to that type of vitriol.
Right. There's a personal cost that you pay.
Exactly.
Putting your name out there.
Right. And then, you know, again, that ties back into your regular life. Right. So if that stuff gets thrown around and then you know, you've got to deal with, you know, your job and work. And if you own a business, that, you know, that might take a hit. So it's almost, you know, a way to keep people out of it. You know, it's tough.
I think it's also an intimidating process. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. I think that it's scary, you know, and I think that, you know, especially when, you know, the people that are in power for a reason. It's because, you know, most of them are pretty ruthless, right? And they're willing to do pretty much anything to get that power, and they want to wield it, and they'll do anything to keep it, right? So, they know no bounds in terms of what they're willing to say or do to destroy you in the eyes of the electorate, right? But then there's the other practical side of it in terms of raising money, the campaign finance laws, which are extremely, you know, complicated, and, you know, if you don't navigate them quite right, now you're looking at fines that accumulate. There's that issue. You know, it's the getting the petition signed to get on the ballot. I mean, there's so many, you know, people talk about voter suppression. This is some serious candidate suppression that goes on with some of these laws. I mean, it's really kind of silly.
Oh yeah, for sure. And Just you know, obviously another little bit of breakdown here. You know, the obviously the Republicans lost, you know, two seats.
That's shocking. I mean, it's almost like the park scores, you know, on the testing. It's like, could they really get any lower than they are?
Yeah.
You know, it's shocking that as few seats as they hold to actually keep losing more and more seats every year. I mean, it's they lost 20% of their seats. I mean, if you look at it that way, it's insane.
And the joke, right, is always, you know, when other parties run, whether it's Moderate Party or Compassion Party or Libertarian Party, you know, when they run, the joke is it's a third party. But in the reality of Rhode Island, it's there's only one party. And that's actually any type of, there's no opposition. You know, there's.
Right. Actually, the two major parties, in one sense, are the two branches of the Democratic Party right now. You've got the moderate sort of mainstream Dems. You've got the progressive leftist Marxist Democrats. Those are the two major parties in the state right now. The Republican Party actually is much more like a third party than it is a second party right now in almost any respect.
Excellent point.
And actually, there was some breaking news today, which is that Blake Filippi was voted in as the minority leader.
I saw that.
Which is, you know, as you know, as he's definitely been a friend of liberty over the years, for sure. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic to see what he's going to bring forth. Obviously, he's got very little power with such a small minority, but I'm just interested to see. I know he's a tough guy. I know he cares a lot about liberty. So we'll see what happens there. I'm happy about the pick, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, for sure. Let me take a quick look at some of the. Now, I started mapping out the progressives, right? So
yes.
You're just as far, and we're still a ways away because, you know, there's a lot of people to identify, you know, what, but the obvious ones were, and there's quite a few, and they gained, you know, quite a few seats. I don't have an exact number, but as it was just.
I think when I looked, it was at least six or seven
exactly
of them that you know, got in there, right. In addition to what they already got, basically. I mean, obviously they lost Regenberg, but he was replaced by Kislyak, I believe. Rebecca Kislyak, I think, is who replaced him in his district, who's a, you know, huge progressive. Justine Caldwell got in. She was the one who took out Anthony Giarrusso. You know, that was the whole controversy there about the feminist letter that went around and
yep.
who really authored that or whatever. Obviously Lofton, Asensio, and Jason Knight getting back in there. Lofton yep. taking out our friend Libertarian Billy Knight. You know, look, they're racking up wins.
Yeah,
they're racking them up
for sure.
I mean, what do you think that it is that leads them to be able to continue to grow their support in the state? I mean, what is the secret of their success in your mind?
I think their ground game. I mean, they're organized. The progressives, yeah. So the progressives are you know, they've got a ground game, right? They are organized. They've got money. I think if I remember the numbers right, Asensio in his primary spent $25,000 against a moderate Democrat, Andy Tiska. So that's a huge amount of money for a primary for a House seat. I mean, that's insane.
But you know, when you think about it, there's so much money up for grabs, right? That the government has to dole out. You know, a $25,000 investment on the whole, right? So you've got a bunch of different groups, environmental groups. You've got working family parties. You know, individuals. You know, if a pack, an environmental pack, throws, you know, spreads out $10,000 around to 10 different candidates in an election year, and they might get $200,000 or $300,000 back in subsidies, it's worth it, right? I mean, it's totally worth it to them. And the more, the bigger the pie gets, the bigger the state gets, the more money that they're taking out of the private sector, out of people's pocketbooks, and doling out at their discretion, the more money people are going to spend to win these races.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's just,
yeah, it just makes it. Yeah. It's an investment, right? It's their return on investment.
I think what's interesting too, and just going back to Lofton, especially because I think that race, you know, for us as libertarians, was obviously the race with him and Billy Hunt was of you know, obvious interest to us. But there are so many things about his candidacy that were just so shocking in a sense. And, you know, he spent so much time talking about his past, right? And how he was, you know, he was working at 12 years old, and, you know, he had to help put food on the table. And it was this real sort of rags to riches type story. You know, now he's an activist and, right. you know, whatever. I think one person said on Facebook, you know, he's not just a politician, he's an activist, you know, as if, I mean, I don't even know what that means. I don't even know if that's a good thing or not. But he gave this interview to RI Future over the summer. And this was before his primary. And he was talking about how progressives can win campaigns. That was the title of the article. And basically what he said was, you know, that people don't really want to hear about policy prescriptions, you know, or why your ideas make sense. They want to hear the story. They want to hear your personal story. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, that's what he focused on. Every answer he gave in every debate. I mean, so much of it was always tied back in to either his own personal story, the story of someone he knows, people he knows who are struggling. Right. And look. It's working. I mean, you can't even deny that it seems to be working. But at the same time, it shows a lack of substance. I mean, because all of the things he's saying don't make any sense. None of his ideas are, you know, are based in any sort of logic whatsoever. There's no substance.
Yeah.
And Billy, to his credit, did a great job of shooting every single one of these things down, from the minimum wage to you know, to the carbon tax, and even right down to, you know, him fabricating his own employment and what he does, it makes a, what he does for a living. And, you know, it just goes to show that someone can be caught blatantly lying in a debate about something as basic as what they do for a living, and it didn't matter. I mean, it really didn't matter in the end. And it's just, it is, it's, hey, like I said in the beginning, it's soul crushing.
Right. No, it is. And yeah, it's demoralizing, but again, you got to keep fighting on, right? You can't give up.
That's what we're doing. And we hope that all of you listening out there are going to fight with us, because we can't do it alone. We need bodies.
Well, that's the thing. And I think it'll become a common theme as the podcast goes on, is mobilizing liberty.
Absolutely.
You know, lovers, if you will.
Absolutely.
People to get out there, because, you know, it's easy to sit behind a keyboard and fight, you know, fight on social media. But when you actually need to get boots on the ground and you know,
yep,
leather hitting the pavement, so to speak, that's, you know, that's what's important.
Right. And that's something that libertarians, I think, can do so much a better job at. It, you know, we're not geared towards necessarily working well in groups. Right. Because we're very individualistic. But I mean, when it comes to politics, it's a numbers game. And that's what it is. And we have to find a way of working better with others, you know, and bringing people together and functioning better in groups. This is something that the progressives and the left do really well, because they are collectivists. I mean, it makes sense. They're good at it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And speaking of numbers, how about those ballot referendums? We'll get back to the progressives and the Democrats.
Oh,
I mean, the Republicans here in a bit, but the ballot referendums, those were,
you know what it's like for me. So, you know, I'm watching the returns, right? And of course I'm watching the races first. I mean, I kind of assumed the ballot measures were all going to pass. Right. But it's sort of like, I would imagine it was like the feeling a Yankee fan had in 2004 when Johnny Damon hit that grand slam in the ALCS, you know, where it just put them away, right? I mean, so you see the results coming out of these ballot measures, and it's not, again, not even close. These ballot measures passed like 75-25, 80-20. I mean, it's, you know, people just like, yeah, you know what? Just lay it on me. You know, give me some new schools, give me some new parks. Yeah, I mean, it's great. I'll take some new parks and new schools, sure. But it's mind-boggling. It's like people have no idea that they're gonna have to pay for this,
right? And
or their children are gonna,
their children and their grandchildren, right?
Exactly.
They're gonna kick this can right way down the road, you know. And I was thinking about this the other day, and I have no, you know, statistics or evidence to back this up, but you know, we all know, it's kind of a common knowledge that older people get out to vote, right?
Yes.
So you almost got to wonder, like, do the older people care? Because, you know,
that's a good question.
when the invoice comes and it's time to pay the bill, they're gonna be gone.
They're gonna, right, be long gone.
So, you know, why do they care?
Hey, you know what, even if it's not a conscious decision on their part,
I mean
it's subconsciously, I'm sure they're just like, oh, I would love for my grandchildren to have a new school to go to. It sounds wonderful, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's just like talking, when people start talking about Social Security reform, you know, the older demographic starts getting nervous. And I don't think anybody is ever talking about taking it away from them. It's like,
right,
it's forecasting, right?
Right.
We're looking ahead and we're saying, oh, this is not going to be able to, it's not sustainable.
So
right, we need to start coming up with solutions now to fix the problem. But then they all get nervous that, oh, that means they're going to take it away from me. And that's, of course, what the opposition always says.
Well,
they're,
right,
going to try to take away your Social Security. And that makes people panic, right? That's their life.
Right. And you know, I think what's crazy to me, too, is this whole idea that, you know, that somehow these programs are successful. I mean, they're totally bankrupt. Every one of these programs is totally bankrupt. They're not sustainable. I think I don't know what the date is. I can't remember. I think it might be 2022 that Medicaid is basically going to be totally bankrupt unless they adjust it somehow in some way, either raise taxes or they reduce the age, or they make it stricter in terms of how you can get a hold of it. But I mean, they're insolvent. I mean, it's the same with a lot of our municipalities, and everything is bankrupt. The whole country, every program, every social program is just totally bankrupt. We owe more than we're bringing in. I'm looking at these ballot measures right now. So the first question was $250 million for school buildings. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, a lot of the schools are falling apart, and there's no doubt about it, right? But it's like people don't want to look at what is the fundamental issue here in terms of why they're falling apart. Could it be that public funding, public education, socializing education doesn't work? It gives you crappy schools at high costs, like every other monopoly in the world.
All the money goes towards the administration, right? So
right,
know, and that's the other thing with these projects, right? So they set the bond to raise the money, but they have no, you know, so they'll go and they'll fix the schools. Of course, these will all these projects, the costs will overrun, and you know that's right. A whole other issue. But then, so what's the plan for maintaining these buildings so they don't get into this state of decay that they're in?
Well,
now.
Exactly. They're not.
They don't have that forecast, and that all that money just goes towards increasing administration or adding.
Right. They're not self revenue creating entities, right? So, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, a good example is in so North Providence, one of the towns, I think, along with East Providence, they got a huge chunk of money from Google, right? And they got this big Google settlement. They got like $60 million, and they put a bulk of it towards building this brand new safety complex, right? It's huge. It's going to be beautiful. You know, there's no doubt about it. But again, how is that going to be maintained once that money goes away? It's not. It's just gone. You're going to have to find some other way of paying for this down the road. And no one seems to care about that. And because, you know, it's the politics of the moment. I want to get elected today. I'm not worried about who gets elected tomorrow. I don't worry about who has to pay for it tomorrow.
Right. Right. You know, but people don't run their lives that way. My wife and I just bought a car, not a new car, a used car, but we bought a car. But part of that process of buying that car was, okay, how much, you know, how much we can afford, obviously, how much is insurance going to go up.
Right.
And
right.
Then, okay, now we have, you know, we need to budget in additional maintenance costs for, you know, just annual, you know, oil changes and then the, you know, the unforeseen, you know, new alternator or whatever, you know, so you've got to start planning that because that's going to happen, right?
You have to plan for contingencies.
That's right.
Unexpected contingencies. And you know why? Because you can't just go up to every neighbor on your street and hold them at gunpoint and take the money from them every year that you need to pay for your new car, Mike.
My car is busted. Give me your money. And that gets back to the principles or the beliefs of libertarians, right? Everything is done at the point of a gun. So,
well, it is. Ultimately.
And people don't understand that, right?
They don't. And you know, they kind of roll their eyes. Yeah. Like, you're exaggerating. You're being dramatic. Oh, you know. But look, I mean, it's true. We're so conditioned to it. We obey these laws because they're the law and we don't want to get in trouble. Right. So, you know, and so there is that underlying threat there of violence at all times. So just to move on quickly to these other two bond issues, I just want to touch on them really quickly. So the second bond question, which also passed by a huge margin, was an additional $70 million for the higher education facilities. So that's CCRI, that's Rhode Island College.
There was an expansion at URI, right? Went through putting
big expansion
in a marine
at URI,
pier
right?
Or something. Yeah.
I mean, so, but here's the funniest thing is that, you know, at the same time, they're giving out years and years of free college. They want to give out all this free, technically, you know, quote unquote, free education to people. They want to also grab another $70 million to expand the campus, of course, because they have to, right? Because a lot more kids are going to be going to college now because it's free. It's not going to cost them anything, but it's like, yeah, okay, all this stuff is so easy. And look, here's the thing. They'll say we're consenting to it. We're voting for it.
Right.
And we are.
Yeah. Well, so some of us are.
Some of us are. Democracy.
So what happens when I want to opt out?
Damn you, democracy. How long the days for absolute monarchs. No, I'm just kidding. And then the last one, of course, is that, you know, is $47 million for environment, recreation, and water infrastructure. I mean, what is water infrastructure? Is that sewage lines? Water infrastructure.
To display my ignorance, I didn't look at it. I saw the $47 million
and you
said
no.
I don't need to know anything about that.
It does,
I just,
right.
No.
And look, as libertarians, does it really matter what it is?
No.
It doesn't.
It does not.
It doesn't matter because it's all nonsense and it's all just stolen money. That's all it is.
But of course, the response is going to be, well, who will build the sewers and who will build the roads?
Right.
You know, like that's right. Never happened before before government or, you know, before they started literally stealing money from you.
Yeah. My favorite example is Disney World. Right. It's like Disney World is basically a big giant city that built itself for the most part. Right. I mean, they have their own sewers. They have their own fire department. They have their own police department, security, water systems. I mean, you name it. I mean, they built it all themselves. They manage it all themselves. You know, they charge an admissions fee. People pay voluntarily. They go there. They have a great. I mean, imagine if Disney World didn't have all the rides that are super expensive and stuff. And it was just like a town. How much do you think it would cost to live there? I mean, people would pay voluntarily, you know, a fee to live there, like, you know, sort of like property taxes, I suppose. But, you know, all of it would be done. You know, it wouldn't be by force. Right. It wouldn't be like forced to pay it all. Everything would all be voluntary.
Right. Yeah. No, those are issues I'm sure over time as we go on with the podcast, we'll definitely be expanding on those ideas.
Oh, yes.
And that philosophy. So,
but right now we have an election to mourn over.
No, for sure. And, so obviously the Democrats are just dominating. We hit on this early in the beginning of our, episode here, but the Democrats obviously dominating here, what are your thoughts? I mean,
I think what's so interesting too right now is that, you know, we've got this rise of the progressives, and I mean, you really are seeing a battle going on right now in the Democratic Party, as much as the Republicans' internal squabbles were on full display this election season, and they were, and it was really embarrassing. I mean, it just makes you feel dirty just watching it happen, you know, fighting with each other and the whole thing. But, you know, the Democrats are fighting with each other. They're less obvious about it, but I mean, I know for a fact that there is a lot of animosity going on behind the scenes between the Nick Mattiello Democrats, the Joe Polisena, right, Charlie Lombardi type Democrats, who are way more centrist, even right leaning in some ways,
yeah.
And these far left progressives like an Aaron Regenberg or Justine Caldwell or whoever else. I think as the progressives get more and more seats in that House and start taking more and more positions, it's gonna get more and more contentious. And I think that they could end up eating each other. It is possible. I'm really just interested to see how that plays out. And Mattiello, I mean, I am not, look, I'm as a libertarian, I'm not a Mattiello fan by any means. But look, I mean, the fact remains is that when it comes to stopping the progressives and their march to, you know, a total Marxist takeover of the state, he, like he said himself, is the firewall. I mean, and... Look, I mean, I've never thought I'd find myself rooting for Nick Mattiello, but I'm kind of rooting for him right now because it's like Game of Thrones. You know, the White Walkers have busted through. The White Walkers have busted through the wall with their giant, you know, zombie dragon, and they're storming towards Winterfell. You know, and it's, you know, maybe it's time for all the men of goodwill to bond together and put our differences aside and stop these bastards. You know?
Yeah. No, for sure, and I'm right there with you on the Mattiello thing, right? Like it actually hurts me,
Nikki.
It hurts me to say, he's a voice of reason up there on many issues, you know, and it's tough. You know, you look at gun control. I mean, he did concede on, you know, on the bump stock thing and the red flag law, but. You know, the reality of like bump stocks are a novelty item. Anybody that knows anything about firearms like that, that's something that you can give in. Now, again, as libertarians, we don't agree with the confiscation or the pseudo confiscation of private property or anything like that. But, you know, he seems to have to make some of those. And he takes the lowest level issue. Again, not saying that's a good thing, but it's. For as blue of a state as Rhode Island is, our gun laws have not completely gone the way of, you know, Massachusetts, Connecticut,
yeah,
California.
That is true. And I think that, you know, I think Democrats like him have a lot to do with that. I mean, you know, a certain extent. And I look, personally, I'm not a gun guy. I don't like guns. You know, I have no interest in the gun culture in any way. But, you know, the whole idea is that I'm not going to tell you you can't have one. All right. I don't want one. That's my thing.
Yep.
No, it's not. You know, and look, if you're talking about the bump stocks and these laws that have absolutely no effect on anything. Look at this mass shooting that just happened in California. I don't know if it was today or yesterday. It was
last night.
It was last night. You know, they found out the guy had a modified magazine on his gun, right?
Which was illegal.
It's just illegal. California's got probably...
How is that even possible if it's illegal?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the logic, right? That's the reality.
The whole idea that, you know, oh, we'll make something illegal and then no one will do it because criminals follow the law, right? I mean, you know, so these laws ultimately are passed for political reasons, to make people feel better about themselves. They don't actually have any real effect at all. You know, so one of these laws that was recently passed, I think, by the House was registered gun owners, people who could conceal carry, weren't going to be allowed to bring their guns on school property. I think this was like because there would be parents meetings and stuff at schools, right? And they didn't want, and it's like, okay, I mean, is that going to stop a criminal from bringing a gun onto the school grounds? I mean, it's not going to happen.
No.
Oh, wait. You're telling me there's a law? Wait, Gina Raimondo says I can't bring my concealed gun onto the school property? I guess I'll go home.
Right. Guess what else is illegal? Murder.
Eggs. Right. Somehow people keep killing other people, though, don't they?
That's it. Well, anyway,
we're not advocating that murder should be legal,
no,
by the way.
No.
We believe in non-aggression. Murder is clearly aggression, in case you were wondering out there. We're not advocating for murder.
Well, that's the difference between punitive and prohibitive laws, right?
Right.
So murder is illegal because, you know, so in case you do that, there's a punishment for it. So it's not, it doesn't prevent anybody from doing it. It just allows for a penalty.
Did you ever see the movie Minority Report?
I did, of course. Yeah.
Right. Awesome movie. But people watch that movie and they're like, man, this is messed up, man. Like, they're arresting these people. They haven't even done anything.
Pre-crime laws.
That's exactly what our laws are.
Mm-hmm.
90% of our laws are pre-crime.
Right.
You haven't done anything, but, you know, you might do something.
So,
So it's illegal and you're breaking the law. I mean.
Just to bring it back around towards the progressive, you know, blue dog fight, if you will, whatever you want to call that. You know, it's interesting how the progressives during their campaigns were using the ousting of Mattiello as a battle cry. You know, it was
right
something they displayed prominently, which I thought was quite interesting. I wonder how that's going to play out now that he won his seat back, and
it looks like he's got the votes too to get it to keep the speakership. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, if his response to WPRI is any indication, you know, he's not going to react kindly to, you know, them using him and them wanting to oust him as speaker. He's not going to take kindly to that. I mean, he's definitely, he seems like a guy who's out for a little bit of revenge. And, you know, it could have been a miscalculation on their part to make that so prominent.
That's right.
And it looks like, politically speaking, it doesn't look like they really needed to do that.
No.
I mean, it seems like they could have stayed home, sat on their asses all day, and still grabbed 60% of the vote.
And that brings me to another point that I had had here thought of is that, you know, when you look at the percentages of the vote that went to the vast majority of Democrats, at least in, you know, the majority of the races, it's almost a, you know, 70-30 split on average. You know, it seems to be, you know, that in that area, you know, and it's 60-40, you know, maybe 65-35 type of split. And you almost got to, even for the progressives, and you almost got to wonder how many people, you know, grandma and grandpa, again, getting back to the older generation, that were Kennedy Democrats that don't even quite grasp the progressive scourge that is coming.
Right. They just see a D
and they vote D, you know, and
actually, I think that makes a lot of sense because I mean, you kind of figure that 30% is sort of your baseline opposition vote. You're kind of your baseline Republican vote, second party vote, whatever it is. That's sort of your baseline. Right. So, you know, when Republicans in the state or anyone else running against a Democrat gets more than that, you know, what it shows is that there are some people on the other side of the spectrum who, you know, who actively chose that person, right, over, you know, their party or whatever, or the party that they identify with, even if they're not registered Democrat, right? You didn't see that at all in this election. I mean, everyone, it seems like everyone went in there and said, you know, I don't know who these people are who I'm voting for, or I don't care who they are, you know, whether it's a, you know, Trump's a Republican, so I'm not voting for any Republican, no matter what, no matter who they are, it doesn't matter to me. It could be the nicest, gentlest, you know, greatest guy in the world. I mean, look at the Keeble race, right? Keeble lost his race, but he still got like, what, like 40 something percent of the vote.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Let me... It's not like he got, you know, like he lost his race, but look up those numbers if you can. Because I think, he, you know, there's still a lot of people that voted for him. There's more people that voted for Kale Keeble in that race, percentage wise, than voted for any Republican or Libertarian or other opposition candidate. I'm pretty sure, which says a lot about party loyalty in the state.
Let me pull those numbers up. What district? He's in District 47.
He's up in Burrville.
Yeah, Burrville. Let me pull up District.
And that's the only reason he lost too, is because he had a scandal.
Right.
He wouldn't have lost otherwise.
Right. Yeah, he still got 43%
of the vote. 43% of the vote.
That's just.
I mean, crazy. That's what, like, it's like 5 percentage points more than Bob Flanders got against Whitehouse. You know what I mean? And so it just goes to show you that, you know, people will vote for party over principle pretty much any time. Or there's people who just go out and vote and they don't really know what they're doing.
Well, the uneducated voter,
uneducated,
right?
Uneducated voters.
You know, and then that's always the big, not controversy, but the big discussion, right? You know, just don't, no matter what you do, just get out and vote. But do we really want you to just go and vote? You know, we want people to kind of educate themselves,
yeah,
right?
voting in and of itself is not a virtue.
No.
And, you know, and you see that with the selfies, with the I voted stickers, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, great, good, you know, great. You went and you filled in some bubbles,
yeah, yeah,
on a sheet of paper. That to me is not virtuous. You
right.
know what I mean? I mean, if you want to talk about who you voted for and why you voted for them, and you know, that is actually something I'm interested in hearing about. But just your sort of, you know, your standard virtue signaling photo of you with an I voted sticker. I mean, okay,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
good for you. It wasn't that difficult. You did it. Congratulations. You know, you're not special because you went and voted. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah.
That's... Actually, that brings up another point in terms of, you know, the party over principle thing. You know, we have more unaffiliated voters in this state that by percentage than almost every other state. I think Alaska is the only state maybe more than us that has more registered independents and stuff. You know, but clearly a lot of these unaffiliated voters tend to identify with the Democratic Party more than the Republican Party. And then you've got half of these registered voters who don't even show up to vote. And so you wonder, why is that such an untapped resource? Why is it so hard? You know, people, and it's like no one's going after those votes. And there's a lot of them out there. And that's a lot of votes. Even if you got 10% of that 50%, I mean, that's enough to make a huge difference. And, you know, that is something that is really racking my brain. The whole concept is like, why aren't these people voting? Is it because they don't care? Is it because they're too busy? Is it because, you know, they're uneducated about it and they don't want to, they don't feel like it's right to go and vote, you know, but they're registered to vote. So there's a lot of people who are not even registered to vote, right? Who live in the state because they just don't care. They just do not give, you know, two craps
right.
about it.
I wonder how much of it also is just people just have given up. I mean, we saw that again in our comment stream that we posted about this this podcast, you know, asking for any input, and people were saying, you know, it's just hopeless, you know,
right?
It's so why bother if it's so hopeless, you know? I mean, how do you again
right.
the Rhode Island motto, right? How do you give people hope again to motivate them to get out and actually, you know,
right,
go vote, you know.
And there's been a lot, there are a lot of doctored Rhode Island state flags that's on social media that either said hopeless or dopes or whatever, right? I mean, and it's true. I think it's demoralizing, and I think that you know, it's sort of, I love the Ron Paul line on voting, which is, you know, if voting made a difference, they'd make it illegal.
Right.
Right. I mean, if it really was going to change something, they would make it illegal. And so, and I think there is some, there's some truth to that. And I get it. I get why people feel hopeless. I still go out and vote. You know, do I really feel like my individual vote is going to make a big difference? I mean, no, but I still do it because, you know, if everyone thinks that their vote doesn't matter, then yeah, collectively they don't matter.
And to that point too, and this is something that I constantly argue about or go back and forth with people on is, you know, the idea that if you do go to vote, you have to pick one of the people on the ballot. And the fact that for one, there's the write-in block, right? Or two, they count every ballot that's registered. So you've got a total amount of people voting. And if those numbers don't total up to the total amounts of votes in a certain race, they know some people didn't vote in that race. And that's a statistic that they can track, right?
Right.
So I personally, my entire ballot, I put, with the exception of the referendums, which I rejected all of those, and I put none of the above on every single race except for the treasurer, which was Riley, who I thought was a good, again, the guy's resume, it's not a party thing, right? The guy's resume is right. Just amazing.
Right.
And he could have done a lot of good for this state, but it just didn't happen.
I voted for Riley too. You know, I had a chance to meet him at the Liberty Forum, you know, and he's a super nice guy. Just following him on social media, you know, he's clearly super knowledgeable about investing, about the numbers. He actually has experience in the investment world. You know, Seth Magaziner is he had no real experience coming in. He hasn't done a good job. You know, he has not brought in good returns. I mean, as if the state should be in the business of investing money in the first place, which they shouldn't. Okay. But I mean, I took the same tack as you. I mean, I wrote somebody in for every single race except for the treasurer's race and except for my one of the local school committee races. Okay. Other than that, I wrote, you know, I voted for you, Mike, for U.S. Senate. I voted for, you know, people I actually know and thought would be good in these positions and far better than the choices that were available. And look, that's a valid vote. Someone wants to tell me I'm throwing away my vote by voting that way. You know what? I got someplace you can go because as far as I'm concerned, if you're voting for any of these clowns, man, you're throwing your vote away.
Yeah, you know, my response to that too is always you need to earn my vote. My vote doesn't, you know, the last time I voted for the lesser two evils was during was for McCain, and I cast my ballot, I went home and I took a shower, like it was like, and that was, and I swore to myself I'll never do that again. Like I just, because at that time I was, you know, Ron Paul was, you know, like coming. That's really what brought me into libertarianism, and I'm just not doing it. And then, of course, obviously, when we met on the Healey campaign,
right,
which is where we met. Obviously, well, most people might not know that, but it was had nothing to do with party.
Nothing.
It was all about Bob and what he represented.
Yep.
Talking to Bob, he was very much a libertarian, not 100%, but again, the 80-20 rule, right? Like he was there enough
right.
libertarian for me
right.
to be wanting to support him, and I cast my vote for him because I felt good about that, not because I was trying to spoil a race or
right.
you know. And it's such a ridiculous fear-mongering tactic that people use to say you're voting for the other guy or vote for so and so is a vote for this person. And
I would
ridiculous.
Love I would love to do an episode of this show some point in the near future and just spend even half of the show doing a retrospective on that campaign, because that was you know, it was something really special. And I laugh when people refer to Bob as a moderate party candidate. I mean, yeah, he did them a favor and jumped in when was it Spooner had to drop out for health reasons. I mean, it was a formality more than anything, but I mean, he gave people an option that they actually wanted to vote for.
Exactly.
It wasn't anybody but Gina, right? It wasn't anybody but Fong, right? It wasn't, you know, I mean, look at Trillo. I mean, God bless him. But I mean, the guy put up a billboard saying he was polling at 33% and he got 4%. I mean, you know, and look, I have respect for anyone who puts their name forward.
For sure. And
like we were talking about earlier, it takes a lot of guts. He spent a lot of his own money. He, you know, mad respect to Joe Trillo for doing that. But, you know, look, I think it shows, you know, the level to which Bob performed on $38 and what he was able to do with the message alone and dedicated volunteers. And you know what? Every time I get depressed about the state of things in this state in terms of the politics, you know, as depressed as I am about some of the outcomes, you know, I know that in District 68, Billy Hunt worked his ass off and walked every inch of that district multiple times. And, you know, it's so upsetting to see, you know, his opponent have such a massive win. And I don't think it reflects on Billy at all. He really crushed it. He could not have worked any harder. But it shows you that when you look back to Bob's campaign, it shows you that those things can make a difference if you get your message out there. And you know, it does give you a little bit of hope.
Right. How many years had Bob been running? I mean, you know, it's just
it took him a long time.
Yeah, it took him a long time to get to that level. And
he was
and
a legend.
What it is.
By the time he ran in 2014, right. He was a cult figure in the state.
Right.
I mean,
and you know, some of that is, you know, some of that I worry about, you know, younger candidates that, you know, run a couple times and then just kind of lose hope and then
they give up. Right.
And I hope that's the worst thing that can happen. You know, you just got to keep plugging at it.
And
at the very least, give them opposition, right?
Like, and this goes to what we're talking about but with all these unopposed races.
Yeah.
Look, even if you just throw your name in there and you have some fun with it, it's still better than, and you know, this is where I disagree with Ken Block. And I love Ken. You know, Ken is one of the smartest people that is out there. Okay. And he's had a great effect on so many different issues. And I have so much respect for Ken Block. But when he talks about, you know, how these sort of sacrificial lambs that run against Cicilline and they run against, you know, the likes of Langevin and White or whatever, in some of these big races, you know, look, Bob Healey, when he first ran for governor, was a first term school committee chairman.
Right.
Okay. And he got, you know, a few percentage points. He ran the next time, he got 9%. I mean, none of those are vast successes. Okay. But over the course of how many years, it got to the point where he ran for lieutenant governor. He had a radical platform. It was a two-way race, and he almost won that race. He got 46% of
the
vote. Very close for a guy who wanted to basically say, you know, I'm going to abolish this office. I'm not going to take any money, you know. And so, you know, that's where I want more people to run. I don't think it makes sense to discourage people from running by saying they're wasting their time or somehow they're hurting the system. Like, no, I disagree. I just totally disagree with that logic.
No, I agree with you. It's something I'm sure we'll talk about as time goes on.
And that kind of brings us to the GOP.
The GOP, right? Oh. The quote-unquote opposition, which is, you know, again, there's a lot of impact on, you know, and you hear it in all the with all the talking heads is, you know, it's the Trump effect and all this other stuff, which I'm sure there's credence to that. And then that has had effect. But the reality in Rhode Island, for one, the brand is toxic, you know, it's a toxic brand and the party's dying. It's just the with the infighting that you see going on and the backstabbing and it's almost sad, really.
It's really sad. I think that, you know, and look, I'm not a Republican fan, really.
No.
You know, in general, I'm not a Republican. You know, I tend to agree probably with as many Republican viewpoints as they do Democratic viewpoints, depending on the issue. Okay. But, you know, there is something sort of sad. Like, I don't take pleasure in watching this thing just completely dissolve the way it's dissolving.
No.
I mean, it's just, and it's hard to explain. You almost wonder if it's, you know, the amount of power they have is getting smaller and smaller by the year. And so they're more and more desperate to get a little piece of that pie. And so they're fighting with each other more and more, you know? And, you know, you wonder, can it survive?
Right.
Could it go away completely? Could you have a situation where you have a state legislature that is literally one party? I don't think it's totally out of the realm.
It'd be interesting to do research on that. Has it ever happened? Ever happened in the history of the United States?
I wonder. That's fascinating.
I'll
get to that. We can talk about that next time because I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
I mean, you look at our entire state leadership, you know, everything from even our federal delegation, it's entirely Democrat. So, and then obviously we talked about the numbers for the breakdown of the General Assembly.
Go ahead.
It's fascinating. There's just no. So what's the step forward, right? Like the brand is ruined. You know, I don't see that coming back anytime soon.
Well, they need to rebrand.
Either they rebrand or another party steps up and starts taking
over. I wonder which party that could be, Mike.
And this is not, we in no way speak for the Libertarian Party of Rhode Island. But the moderates died. You know,
they're gone.
They died. Bill Gilbert couldn't pull out the 5% that they needed.
Nope.
And
gone. I mean, wouldn't it be funny if for whatever reason, some year there was, you know, let's say there was a really good, viable third party candidate and somehow the Republican didn't get 5%. I mean,
that would be interesting.
They'd lose their party status. Am I right? I mean,
yeah, they would.
You know, and look, I think, you know, it's one of those things where it was not that long ago that the Republicans had 16 straight years of governorship in this state. Okay. It was not that long ago. It was Lincoln Almond had 8 years in office. And then right after him, it was Kachiri, who had another 8 years in office. So 16 years straight, the Republicans had the governorship in this state. And then after that, it was Chafee, who was a Republican, then independent, then Democrat. So, I mean, Gina was the first Democrat to win an election since what, Sundlin, you know, and it's like they had all that power and they're just gone.
Which is funny though, when you say power, I'm going to throw up the air quotes there because, as we know, the governor's office has very little power in the state.
Very little power.
But yet the Democrats will blame the mess we're in for those years of Republican governorship.
Right.
As the reason why we're in this mess, which is laughable,
right.
You know,
right.
when the governor is essentially powerless in the state for many things.
Right. In terms of shaping policy, there's almost no power there, but, you know, it is a guaranteed mouthpiece
that everyone
listens to. And the fact that was not taken advantage of in order to build, you know, opposition in the state house is just telling. It's telling. And it shows that their eye was not where it needed to be.
Yeah.
Ultimately,
just real interesting getting, you know, kind of circling back to Bob Healey, which, you know, we heard over and over how Bob is the one that spoiled it for Alan Fung.
Right.
You know, like he was the spoiler. He took votes from Alan and all this other stuff. A good friend of a member of the Liberty RI team, John, made an excellent point. You know, now that Gina won 52% to Alan's 37%. You know, it kind of shows you that Bob more than likely pulled more votes from Gina than he did from Alan.
He absolutely did.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was.
And we had done the math on that afterwards in the analysis.
Right.
And I've lost the spreadsheet, but it was obvious. Yep. That
convenient
that's what
talking point for Alan.
Right.
You know, and look, again, all much respect to Alan. But, you know, look, he should have been praying that Bob was still alive. And ran again because he probably would have done better. He might have actually won, you know. So that argument is completely toast at this point. And you know, but I think until we get a system in this state where, you know, 50% or more is required for victory, you're always going to have that spoiler conversation.
And that brings up an excellent point with the argument, right? The third spoiler argument. Why don't those people jump on either the alternate voting system, whether it's ranked choice voting or whatever it may be? There are alternate systems out there that prevent that, you know, instant runoff, all prevent that third party spoiler and allow people to actually vote their conscience at the same time. Why don't they jump on that bandwagon and start pushing that forward instead of just sitting there complaining, you know? And I
think part of the reason is I think there's still this belief that somehow there's a benefit to, you know, running in a three-way race, that in a plurality situation that you only need 35% to win, right? Yeah, but that's assuming that the vote is split that way, in which case, in most states, it's not. You're going to have a pretty solid 45% for one party or the other, no matter what, okay? So, you know, for third parties not to get on the ranked choice voting bandwagon is they're signing their own death certificate, in my opinion. I think you need to give people that option to say, okay, you know what? I want to vote for Bob Healey, for instance, or I want to vote for Daniel Munoz or whoever it might be, Ann Armstrong, whoever it is you really like for whatever reason you like them. But to be able to do that and then to write someone else's name under theirs as a second option in case there's no majority, that gives you cover to say that I can vote my conscience. And you know what? If it turns out that no one gets 50%, then my vote will go somewhere else. And I think it's a no-brainer. You know, I know there's a lot of people who obviously would like to work against that. But I think for third parties to be working against it doesn't make any sense to me. I think it's a false notion that somehow the plurality is good for third parties. It's not. We need the ranked choice voting. There's no doubt.
And just looking, I just looked real quick at 2014 and 2018. Fung went up 1 percentage point. So, you know, it's obvious that. But
in the third party this time around got 4% compared to 21%. I mean, right,
exactly.
There. I mean, and yep. Obviously there were a few more candidates in the race this year who maybe collectively got another 2 or 3%. But
it's nothing it's measurable.
Not even close.
Yeah,
it's not even close. So, yeah, I mean, look, he didn't seal the deal. He didn't present a clear vision. He spent all his time fighting with Joe. I mean, for all the time that Alan spent complaining about Joe working with Gina, he spent all his time fighting with Joe when he should have just ignored him, focused on the message, focused on Gina. And if he had acted as if Joe didn't exist, you know, Joe probably, you know, would have gotten 2%, you know, but, you know, he made a miscalculation there. And look, you can always look back. Hindsight is 2020. You can always look back and it's easy to look back and say, okay, well, you didn't do this right. You didn't do that right. But I mean, having run for governor once already, having been a mayor, how many different terms now? I mean, you'd think these things would be figured out and talked about and the strategy would be there. And it just wasn't there. Gina crushed it. I mean, she killed it. She killed it.
It's time for somebody else to step up.
Yeah, you got that right. I mean, who's it going to be though?
Yeah.
I mean, do we need a business leader? But
the thing is,
someone with a big name. I mean, I don't know. Giovanni Carracci did not exactly inspire the masses. No. You know, God bless him. He didn't inspire anybody.
No, it's you're right. And the other thing, again, getting back to it, is the third party, the fourth party, the fifth party, it's not going away. So just figure it out.
Right.
It's not going to wait. It's going to get worse, actually. And I don't say worse, but it's going to get worse for the opposition. It's
right.
Going to get better for freedom.
And I know one thing I'll say, and I'll say this in terms of, you know, because we're talking about the election, right? So obviously, you know, that there were a couple of libertarian candidates out there running for a general assembly who, you know, unfortunately, you know, did not succeed. But I can tell you that, you know, the next day, you know, people who love liberty in the state are already mobilizing. They're already mobilizing for the next election. They're already mobilizing for the next issue. Look, next week, We're going to be talking about Hasbro. All right. We're talking about Hasbro next week. Corporate welfare, corporate subsidies, corporate favors are live and well in the state. And people are always looking to throw money, you know, someone's way. And, you know, these are the things that liberty lovers can fight against. We don't have to wait for every election to fight for liberty. We can do it on these issues. Look, I credit the Libertarian Party in large part for making sure the Paw Sox thing didn't happen. Thank God it didn't. That is a boondoggle and a half. That's Worcester is going to be, you know, they're not going to be happy with the way that turns out 10, 15 years from now, whenever it is. So, you know, and that's a victory. I mean, and you could say in a lot of ways, that's a bigger victory than, you know, an electoral victory in a lot of ways. So I know that we're already mobilizing people who love liberty. We need you. We need you to band together, share this podcast, listen to us, get out there, speak your mind, write letters to the editor in your local paper, you know, make your voice heard, speak out against issues. Don't wait for the next election. You know, the battles are constantly coming our way and we have to fight them.
And I think that's a good point. It's a wrap for our first episode. I think it went well. If you want to share with our listeners how they can get in touch with us, Eric?
Yeah, you can find us on libertyri.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, LibertyRI. Please share us on social media. Get the message out there and contact us with any questions. Send us an email. You can email me at eric@libertyri.com, or you can email Mike at mike@libertyri.com. If you have any questions, topics you'd like to talk about, for us to talk about in our next episode, please send them our way and we'll talk about them. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
Take it easy.
You've been listening to the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Be sure to check us out at libertyri.com.